You're listening to Around Comics, episode 156. Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic book roundtable. I'm your host, Sal, and I am joined by Scotty Young, Marvel artist, and Mr. Daddy Longstroke.
Daddy Longstroke,
professional kickass. Why isn't your mic on? Oh, no.
Oh, what happened?
I have it turned down. I have the wrong mic turned down.
Why are you dissing me?
Sorry, man. Didn't mean it.
Why are you salting my game?
Now we are joined by Scotty Young.
Yes.
And Tom Caters.
I'm wearing my Evel Knievel helmet and my number 21 button.
Poor Evel Knievel. He finally... All those crashes and...
He made the final big jump. The last ramp up to heaven.
Poor Evel Knievel. He passed away today, so...
He died of too much awesome.
Yeah.
That's right.
He's now in traction in heaven.
Yeah.
Everybody... And God's scared of him. You're a crazy motherfucker. That's why I did not kill you sooner.
Wait till Chuck Norris gets up there and there's going to be all sorts of shit going down.
You know God...
Can you jump a punch? In heaven you can.
You know, God didn't ever actually kill Evel Knievel because it's like, it was a weird rat that he just got to sit and watch. Like, oh,
he couldn't.
How did I?
Because Evel Knievel was God.
Oh yeah. Ooh.
Evel Knievel is kind of
he
like
he jumped God.
He jumped God.
I always sort of imagine Evel Knievel was kind of like the Challengers of the Unknown. You know, where they living on borrowed time. And he's this mystical creature who, you know, he's not supposed to still be alive, but he kept kicking it. Well,
all those jumps, he never jumped the shark.
How old was he?
Exactly. He never
How old was he?
I don't know. I would say he's probably
Because I've been saying his name since I was
80.
A goddamn kid. Yeah.
Well, I think it's important to remember that the spirit of Evel Knievel has always been present in mankind. There's always been,
it will live on forever.
Since the first caveman jumped over a dinosaur. Evel Knievel's been with us.
His son,
one way or another.
His son's still around and still doing. He just like hangs out
in
Vegas.
Is there an Evel Knievel comic book? Come on.
There had to have been.
He must have been in a comic
there
book.
There had
at some
to
point.
Yeah.
I think there was. I think in the comic book documentary I watched, I think Superman. Might have done
fought
something.
Fought Evel Knievel.
What up?
Evel Knievel crashed a motorcycle.
At one time or another, Superman has been with everybody. Muhammad Ali, the Harlem Globetrotters, probably Pat
Kennedy,
from Saturday Night Live.
Kennedy, John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
How did Superman take to having a bucket of confetti thrown on him?
Rip torn?
The Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, he was in a comic with Rip Torn.
That's what I thought you meant. I was like, I missed that issue. All right, well, yeah, so long to Evel Knievel, one of the truly remarkable men of history.
Yeah. I like you could just have a lifetime full of retarded acts and you become remarkable when you die.
You think Johnny Knoxville right now?
Yeah.
Is like looking into a mirror. Wondering,
I'm next.
I'm next.
Now I'm remarkable. Because I let people shoot me with guns. And
say what you will. The guy.
I talked my buddies into putting Hot Wheels up their asshole.
The guy was at least the best at what he did.
He was the best retard
He's
ever.
He's the Wolverine at earning yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The best at what
He's
I
the
do.
Best there was at what he did. All right, let's move on a little bit. I want to remind everyone that this episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection, point blank, to Around Comics listeners. And pretty much anyone else, for an amazing 35% off of cover price.
You have to answer a quiz to see if you listen to the show.
Get yours copy today for only $9.72. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free.
Where are we recording that, Tom?
We are recording in heaven, otherwise known as Dark Tower. Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 p.m. at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. Yeah! Yeah! Located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would like to meet you.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right.
And then leave.
I'm sick.
You're sick today?
Yeah.
Yeah, have you been fighting the cold?
Yeah, I've been sick the last couple days.
Are you going to throw up?
Me too.
I probably won't throw up. My shit.
No, great.
Oh, nice.
It's the fucking holidays, because I'm like, being a comic book artist is sort of like being the boy in the bubble, right? Like, you never get sick because you're never around fucking people.
Right.
And then I go home for Thanksgiving to my parents' house, and
picked
there's
up a virus.
Fucking babies everywhere, and then I got the fucking baby blicket.
Well, it is a problem when you actually interact with other human beings.
Yeah. I hate humans.
They carry... Oh, hey, man, I got kids, and all they do is rotate sicknesses from school to each other to me and mom and back and forth, and it's just constant.
I embrace sickness.
You
it makes
enjoy
me
it?
Stronger every time. If I can survive it, I'm better.
What doesn't kill you.
What doesn't kill me makes me stronger. Bring it on. Bring me your babies.
Well, we'll try and weather through the storm of sickness.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can make it. You weren't too sick to do another podcast this week, sir. So, you know.
I think I said I was sick on there, too.
I could tell you were sick on there. You sounded a little nasally.
Yeah.
And Tom,
I was fucked up.
Tom did his other podcast.
Yeah, we're traitors this week. We should ring that bell.
And we should mention Chris is not here today.
Yeah, Chris
isn't
here.
Right.
Chris, we didn't even mention. Chris is gone. He's off in Southern Illinois with his father, enjoying some Saluki basketball.
Oh, nice.
His father bought him some tickets.
I think him and Casey are having an affair because she's in Southern Illinois too.
Interesting.
Convenient.
I wonder if he hides his smoking from her too.
Oh,
I just reacted.
You did like a little Ed McMahon there.
You are correct, sir.
You are correct, sir. Why is there toothpaste in my backpack?
All right. Well, with that being said, let's move on to top of the stack.
Top of the stack.
That's right. Top of the stack. Our chance to tell you what we've been reading the last week or so. 2 weeks, really.
It's been a couple weeks since I got to pick anything, so I have lots of things running through my head.
Running through? Well, why don't you spill them out?
Vomit them.
Vomit them.
Throw them up.
The first one I wanted to talk about was the new issue of Fear Agent. Hatchet Job 1 of 5, or numbered 17. It's kind of... Did you notice that? The weird numbering now?
Well, yeah, I noticed it on the last one, because I was confused. I originally thought the last arc was a miniseries, because it was...
Yeah, but it's like 16 in a series.
Right,
yeah,
16 in a series, they say. I don't know why they're...
They're trying to play, but, you know, because there's the people that would get pissed off because their numbering is all, you know,
right.
Like, I don't want a series of miniseries. I want one through...
But they are running. They are running pretty much...
Yeah.
I mean, they all run in a series. They all go together.
It makes sense.
Yeah. So
ease up.
No, I have no problem.
No, I'm not talking to you.
Oh.
I'm looking at you, but
okay.
I'm talking to
into the mic.
Take it fucking easy, everybody.
Sorry.
Just enjoy it. It could all be number one.
Well,
that's all you care.
Tell us.
I'm going to number it 100.
So this is the number 1 of 5.
Of a new storyline.
And number 17 of a series.
Of overall.
Hatchet Job.
It's Hatchet Job.
Oh, Hatchet Job.
Illiterate Scotty.
I just saw an H and a job.
It's a hand job.
H jobs, baby.
Written by Rick Remender. This is Jerome Opeña is back on it. Him and Tony Moore have been switching back and forth on stories.
I love the Jerome Opeña.
Yeah, big fan?
Yep.
And this storyline, you know, it picks up where they're back on Earth. They're on the moon with all the humans that survived the latest attack from aliens. Now they have to go find a new place to live.
Is the moon technically part of Earth?
Well, it came from Earth.
Okay.
And depending on what conspiracy theories you want to...
All right. We'll leave that for the Art Bell.
Yeah, we'll let someone else handle that. Heath, the main character's wife, has gotten married to somebody else in the time that he's been away from Earth.
Oh,
so,
bitch.
Nasty.
And he gets paired up with her new husband to go get some food from a nearby planet. And they go
of
there,
course.
And it ends up like a crazy Indiana Jones-style action with giant man-eating flowers and
of course
creatures that kind of look a bit like Venom, but with a little white on them, riding giant goldfish through the sky. And you know, it's just this, you know, sort of
crazy
standard Fear Agent, you know, two-fisted action,
mm-hmm.
you know, running around. And it's gotten really interesting in the storyline because the last one sort of introduced a new sort of twist to it where you understand why Heath is sort of as fucked up as he is, because he sort of killed an entire race of aliens
That would fuck you up.
Yeah, thinking that he was doing something good and then realizing that he, you know, was the villain in the whole story. So we see more of that played out, and we see why he drinks a lot and, you know, hates sort of self-loathing.
It's not just because he's cool.
No, no. Self-loathing, while cool, oftentimes comes from tragedy.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know too many people that have killed an entire race of people.
It sounds kind of like Star-Lord.
Star-Lord?
Star-Lord, the Marvel character.
Oh, I'm unfamiliar with Star-Lord. He killed an entire planet. Does he drink a lot?
No, I don't think he drinks a lot.
Do you think they should add that to the character?
I think maybe, yeah. Maybe they
I killed an entire nest of ants once, and I ate a lot of pizza.
You had half a beer.
Yeah.
You had half a beer,
half
and then
a
you were
beer
okay.
And a lot of pizzas. And I worked it out.
You were like, those ants.
Right after that?
I called Oprah.
Well, aliens and ants.
We're the adversaries. And then you drink half a beer, and you relax.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that's the first thing off the top of my head that I really, really enjoyed.
Like was classic. The twist, the addition to his character development.
It made this what had sort of been just a basic sci-fi, you know,
action adventure,
gave it a little bit more depth to the character. And it sort of has been introduced kind of far along into the series. I mean, by the time that storyline came out, there'd already been, you know, 13, 14 issues of the comic.
Right.
When you finally, you know, see this twist come, and it adds a different level to it, which I
They seem to continue to sort of do that kind of thing with Heath. And I mean, initially when you first meet that character, he's, like I said, very sort of, you know, John Wayne-ish kind of,
oh,
you know,
he's
straightforward.
Just a drunk asshole.
Right, right. And but then, you know, as the series has gone along, they keep giving you sort of peeks into his past and how it's made him, you know, sort of.
It's also sort of not just science fiction, it's equal parts. There's been, the last storyline was like a war comic.
Right.
You know, almost. And this one's more of like a Indiana Jones style adventure. So it isn't just strictly sci-fi all the time either. It introduces sort of cliches and ideas from other sort of stories and mixes them up. So you always get something different.
Always,
you know,
something new and exciting.
Yeah, this one's a little bit,
and the boys.
A little bit more action. You know, it's not so. The last one was a little more like, sad sort of, you know, dreary war comic. And this one's a little bit more high flying action.
Well, I think Rick and Tony, and I mean, they wanted this series to be able to sort of let them do whatever it is they wanted to do in the genre and play around in it, because I know they're big fans of, like, you know, the EC stuff and
there's flying goldfish.
Hey, can't go wrong.
Yeah. If you're going to have something flying, don't make it a giant bird. I mean, come on.
Yeah, cliche.
Giant birds, yeah, giant birds are done.
Not ants either, because I kill them.
Yeah.
Not ants, because Scotty will.
Old and busted. Goldfish flying.
All right, well.
New hotness.
Very
exactly,
good.
Yeah.
Very good.
New hotness.
Giant birds are busted.
Well, I'll go next. My top of the stack this week is Brave and the Bold number 8.
So I'll just pull out his memoir notebook.
Yeah, I have my note. I take notes when I read comics now. Because
do you?
Because I'll forget why I like something. Because I read so many.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like I'll forget what it is that I, you know.
Do you
something
have a grading system?
No. It's just sort of like.
Just scribbling?
I have a notebook. I have a notebook
that comes
for,
off the top of my head.
I have a notebook for sex.
You take notes during
sex?
Yeah,
because I so much. Not really. Yeah, that I forget.
Uh-huh.
No, not even close.
Anyway.
I'm very sad now.
Yeah, you're
just
like,
myself.
This was written by Mark Waid with pencils by George Perez, inks by Bob Wyasek, and colors by Rob Lee. Basically, it's the plot is Wally West, the Flash, who's back, and his wife Linda bring their kids Iris and Jay, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's a... I think in
it's supposed
reality,
to be Jay Garrick.
Yeah, but in reality, I think you would pronounce it Jai.
Jai, yeah.
But, you know, whatever. They had to be cool and put in, I guess, wise or old and busted and
eyes
are
the new hotness. So Jai or Jay and Iris, they take the kids to see the Doom Patrol and more specifically, Doctor. He's a doctor, right?
Doctor Niles Calder.
Yeah. Niles Calder. He kept contacting them, saying that he thinks he could help them with their. Yeah. They have powers now. In case you're not aware of it.
Yeah.
The kids, Wally's children, but they're very unstable. And Calder thinks that he can help them stabilize their power. So, reluctantly, they decide to go and visit the Doom Patrol and see what they can do to help the kids. I love the fact in this that Wade wrote the Doom Patrol as creepy.
Yeah.
And even a guy like Wally West doesn't trust them and doesn't necessarily know exactly where they're coming from, you know?
It's sort of, it's like a darker sort of version of the X-Men, you know, where the X-Men are right. Like a family and... Professor X is like the caring father. This is sort of like a dysfunctional family where the dad manipulates everyone. Yeah, like you're not quite sure if the doctor wants to, it really wants to help them or just likes
use
messing,
them for something else
use them for
or
experiments.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that there's always that ambiguity with that character.
And I thought Wade really, really wrote that well because sometimes you'll see the Doom Patrol and it's not. I mean, they're just like another superhero.
They're just around.
Yeah, they're just around. But I thought he really did that well. And my favorite part of the book was when they first get to the castle that the Doom Patrol live in, and they sort of introduce the kids to each one of the Doom Patrol. It was very much like a horror movie, and each one was a different sort of monstrous character, mummy, Frankenstein, and that kind of thing.
Really nice woman.
Yeah.
That was my favorite one. Because sometimes Elastic Woman is a little hard... to make creepy,
right?
They found a way to do it.
To do it, yeah.
That she's overly nice and trying to make up for the fact that they're all
freaks.
Fucking weirdos, you know? And that makes her, you know, creepy.
And then I also really, really liked Calder, how he was written, because he's just this arrogant, sort of delusional character that blames everyone else for everything.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand why people don't just accept everything he says, and when they don't, he considers
gets
it...
mad at him.
Yeah, he gets mad at him for it, so... and there's also an appearance of Metamorpho.
Yeah.
And the story is going to continue next month, in the next issue.
Well,
go on, but...
they've done a pretty good job of every issue sort of tying in together and sort of a bigger, you know, a bigger
overarching
story.
But they've been really easily, digestible individual issues. But it was just a lot of fun. I mean, I just thought it was really fun, and I like the idea that it wasn't like...
I thought Wade...
real serious, and it was just sort of this fun comic.
I like how Wade wrote the kids and Wally and that book better than in the actual Flash book.
Yeah, yeah.
That was written a little bit better, you know.
Yeah, because I've been a little... I was going to ask you about that, because I've been a little bit annoyed by the family
aspect. I thought in the
last
one they were a little bit better, because you saw the kids sort of act more like kids instead of just creepy little...
beings.
Monsters running around, you know? So,
but what I was going to say is it's strange now that, like, you know, all the main, other than Wonder Woman, it's like a lot of the main characters in DC now have children. I mean, you see the Flash has two kids. Superman has a son, basically, now.
Yeah.
Batman has a son.
What?
And
what you talking?
And it's like, what are they? I started to think about it a little bit. I'm like, and now there's been the rumors of, like, Batman
dying. I'm sure
Hal
Jordan has, like, 1,000 kids.
Yeah, he's been all over.
So many chicks when he was a toy salesman. As is traditional in that.
Yeah, toy salesman get a lot of ass.
Gets so much tail. So I got my slinky.
What they didn't tell you, he was a sex toy salesman.
So, yeah. Oh, that's
true. Yeah, a novelty.
Yes.
But I just thought that was kind of odd that now all of a sudden it seems like a lot of these... like I said, initially when Wally came back, I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. But then I started reading it, and I'm like, I really don't want to read a Flash comic about, like, Flash being a dad.
See, I think if it's written well, like anything, it'll be...
Well, yeah, if it's written well, I suppose.
Because a character, he's sort of like the same thing with, like, Nightwing, where it's a weird character where he started off as a kid in the 60s, and as the story's gone along, they've actually sort of slowly aged him.
Right.
So you've seen him, like, as a kid, a teenager.
Yeah.
It's sort of weird, whereas Batman's always been an adult.
An adult,
Superman's always been, you know, sort of an adult. So he sort of falls into that weird region where he's eventually going to be older than Batman.
Right,
you know, at
right.
the pace. That, like, Nightwing, you know, he keeps getting older than Batman.
Yeah, Nightwing
keeps staying the
Nightwing's
same.
Nightwing's 35 and Batman's 40.
Yeah, he's 40.
How the hell that
Yeah, I know. It doesn't quite work out. But, I mean, I think it sort of fits. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily been written really well, and I think the art's been pretty inconsistent in that book, too.
Uh-huh.
I think it's getting better.
Yeah.
I think once they give the kids something to do.
Because I like the Flash, but but I just thought that was sort of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
So that was it. Brave and the Bold, number 8.
Yeah.
And I did want to mention, he didn't actually ink this issue, but one of our listeners who I emailed with this week is the inker normally on that book. who listens.
What is his name?
Brian Koblish? Wait, I got it right here. Hold on a second. What is his name? I lost it. I had
what
it.
What an ass.
Yeah.
Oh, I lost Chris, it.
Brian. Good job, Brian.
Anyway, he wrote us an iTunes review, too, this week. No, I'm sorry. Scott Koblish. Not
Scott.
Brian.
Good job, Scott.
Scott Koblish. He's the inker.
I like your name.
And he yelled at us because...
we didn't mention him?
No. No, he's
Jesus.
Like...
Sorry, oh, Scott.
I'm the artist on this book called whatever. I don't remember what it was, but... The Weapon. And he's like, I'm sure none of you guys read it because it came from Platinum. And I actually had read it because they sent me a copy.
Oh, we dissed Platinum a fair amount of times.
Platinum, yeah. That's why he was saying it, but...
And he was yelling at us for real?
No. He was just kidding around.
He knows that company's whack.
He just can't say it.
Yeah.
Like us.
Yeah.
Why are you guys dissing this company? Oh, keep doing it.
Why are you dissing them?
Thumbs up. So I just wanted to say hi.
Not that Scott actually
Scott.
Thinks that.
I better be quiet because Platinum might not ever give me work.
They may not.
One of the other books I wanted to talk about, which...
All right, well,
I picked up a Punisher War Journal, the newest one. I think it was 13, with the art by Corey Walker instead of Olivetti.
Yeah.
And I dropped it when Olivetti was doing the art. And he does very nice, like, looking pictures, but I felt like as it kept going, like... The
Punisher
muscles
was
on
huge.
Everyone
oh,
was
yeah.
Everybody.
Ridiculous.
Gigantic. Yeah, and I was just like, this doesn't make any... You know, I was like, God, why is everyone... built like a fucking tank,
freak
you know,
of
like
nature.
Yeah, it was really weird. And then I pick up the, you know, Corey Walker did it, and it was like, oh, that makes sense. And he drew a really great Spider-Man too in that issue,
yeah.
Where Spider-Man is normal sized guy. You know, he's not like this ripped. It's not. I looked on the shelf and it's not there. But I was like, oh wow, that art completely changed that how I was viewing that book. Because previously, not only did I think everyone was a little bit ripped, I felt like everything was a little bit posed all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I always felt like nothing was moving.
A bunch of shots from a muscle man.
Yeah, nothing was like moving in the book. And then, you know, I pick up the Corey Walker issue with Dave Stewart did the coloring on it too. Mm-hmm. And I love his colors because he does, you know, makes everything look so pretty and
nice.
Yes,
he does.
You know? And you see him draw characters like the Rhino, who is a big guy.
Right.
But he doesn't draw him like...
Ripped.
It's a like dude in a suit.
Yeah.
You know? Like, so he's just a dude in a giant rhino suit. He's not... Doesn't have like 1,000 rippling muscles in this apparently skin-tight suit that some people, know, draw the Rhino. And I was like, oh, you know, this makes more sense. It makes it feel, you know, more real.
Right.
In a way, you know, it feels like they look like people.
More plausible.
Even though,
I mean, it just...
Not real in the sense of, like, photorealism, but, like, as far as visually and following a story, you can believe, like, the universe that they're in and how things...
Well, I mean, even in, like, you know, it's like even in movies, it's like not everybody in a movie is, you know, always good-looking or always ripped or, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like you have to have some balance of you know, normality, you know, to contrast.
Well, that's why
it.
I'd always feel like everybody knows that Felicity is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But one of my biggest complaints was that I'm hard pressed for people to tell me that a girl that is that good looking was the
nerdy.
Shut in, nerdy high school. Now, I'm not saying she couldn't have been really smart. But I have a hard time trying to tell me that she was not, like, she was the outcast socially. Because, I'm sorry, we all know how school works. When you are hot, you're in, right?
Yeah. And
I was.
A lot of
well, that's a lot of movies and a lot of,
it's like, why is this person unpopular? like, I don't understand the physics of it.
Mike was talking about, Norton was talking about that, I don't know if you're on this show or on the Cranecast, I get him confused sometimes.
Right.
But he was, like, that show Chuck.
Right.
Where the guy's supposed to be a nerdy, you know, but it's like he's 6'3", you know, in good shape, good looking guy. It's like, I don't picture him as a nerdy, having trouble with girls kind of guy, you know. Or
on the OC with, what's his name?
Oh, Adam Brody.
Adam Brody, come on.
Yeah, I was
he's tall. Right there gets you ass. I'll tell you that right
tall,
now.
Tall, good looking.
You know what I'm talking about. OC. Yes. Tall, being tall, instant ass, right? Funny, double instant ass. And he's fucking good looking.
And rich.
Yeah.
Oh,
but I'm so nerdy. And he skateboards.
Yeah.
I got more ass just showing a skateboard than anything in high school.
But the awesome thing, the weird thing with that, with the OC, too, is that, like...
Ryan is the badass.
He read comics, though, didn't he?
That's
why he couldn't.
Yeah, that's why.
He never got it.
But that's
he was
a perfect example of, like, oh, it's so...
Like, wait a second, that guy is... Why wouldn't people not like him? Right. I don't understand. What's, of course, the fact that there was no unattractive people in that high school right. was also affected.
Moderately.
And he was Jewish.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
You
that's...
know how that goes.
My usual biggest complaint is usually Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the people... draw Spider-Man
gigantic,
just like thigh muscles that could crush a car.
Well, that's where I like,
I'm like, oh yeah, Peter, like you, Peter Parker. All of a sudden, he puts on tights and he balloons up.
He doesn't. He even does
that's
it in
why
the movies.
I liked Corey Walker's version. It was nice to see Spider-Man who was just like a dude in a black
goofy
Spider-Man suit.
Right, you've talked before about All-Star Superman, where quietly Superman, how it's he's not this
he's not
you know,
rip,
bodybuilder.
He's just a big
he's just a big kind of bulky dude that. And then
I mean, he'll still fuck your shit up.
Well, yeah, he could still throw a punch. You know,
oh yeah,
mess you up.
Yeah, he gets some ass. He's tall.
He's tall. He probably
Superman probably skateboards better than anyone.
Probably.
He's got, probably got super.
He
skills.
Could do a 945 yeah. kickflip.
Yeah, he's Superman
over the moon.
He's funny. He's got a super sense of humor.
Yeah, super
he's a
everything.
Great joke. Excellent comedic timing.
It just, I just find it. It's, and I think it really comes down to. American comics, we've rotated around the superhero genre for so long and have kind of zeroed in as this being our only outlet for comic, the main outlet for comics in America, and especially the big creators in the 90s, the Jim Lees, the Rob Liefelds, and the Tom McFarlane, all the guys that made it comics gigantic in the 90s, that's what they all did, and now it's just forever the same way.
You can't get away from it.
Yeah,
you
because, I mean, it's... going before that, I mean, if you look at Kirby's and the Buscemas and the Goldens and the
guys
from those times, it was like there was a variety of people. Mm-hmm. There was a variety of characters. There were skinny people. There were, I mean, even people that draw fat people, the fat people are cut all up. You know what I mean? Like, wow, that fat guy has a six-pack. You're like the Kingpin, right?
Yeah.
I hate when I see somebody draw the Kingpin and he's all, like, dieseled out, but he's just large.
He's sumo wrestler. He's got a lot of muscle underneath that thin layer
of fat. We just hit this weird stage where it was like, and that's a funny thing. I mean, you could go back to, like, how to draw comics the Marvel way.
Uh-huh.
And that actually teaches you better than some of these newer books out because they weren't focusing on here's the tricep and here's the bicep.
Right.
It's just like here's how to draw the form, you know, and fudge with the form. Because if you look at all the characters from back then, they were just so distinct in shape and talked about silhouettes. And you could see a character from its silhouette alone.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people today –
you can't tell.
I mean,
you couldn't tell one guy
unless
from the
he has
next,
goddamn bat ears.
Right.
Who is it?
Yeah.
You know, because everybody's the same. It's just the same build, the same
ripped.
Yeah.
Rippedness.
But I do feel like the weirdly enough, the more and people usually hate on these people, and that's why I can't ever figure it out is, and the more cartoony style guys tend to get it right when it comes, like you said, like a Corey Walker.
Yeah.
Somebody who focuses on design and shape, and approaches it from a more simplistic matter. Cares more about the character than how many lines of hatching he can put on the crease of an elbow. You know what I mean?
And then I look at my elbow and I'm like, yeah,
not enough
that
crease.
Is how my elbow looks.
Yeah. Oh my God, look at my hand. It's so hatched.
Why is my whole body is hatched?
Very
incredibly.
Hatched.
Yeah. I got tattoos of it all over every joint. I have little black lines like everywhere, and I wear large coats that are stuffed so they wrinkle a lot when I'm constantly
with
wearing
pockets.
Them.
Lots of pockets.
Did you have something, another book?
I have one more.
I got a couple
well,
things.
Go ahead.
I wanted to mention that I had previously talked about the manga book I had read about 7-Elevens, and I finished the one last week about cup noodles.
Just real quickly, I just want to say, fuck 7-Eleven. Because in my neighborhood, they've bought up all the white hens and turned them into 7-Elevens.
In Chicago, too.
Yeah, it sucks.
Most of them
7-Eleven, I don't like. White hen was the shit.
What is the difference between the two that bothers you?
Better coffee, mostly.
Okay.
White hen had better coffee.
I'm not familiar enough, I guess, to pick up the difference.
All the ones in the city have changed, too.
Have they?
I think most of the ones, to my knowledge, have
sucks.
Changed.
Sucks. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
Back to your story. I'm sorry. I just had to get that out.
And fuck cup of noodles.
Fuck cup of noodles. I finished it, and... it was, once again, really fascinating. I wouldn't say the art was great, but it was, again, really interesting to see something that you think is really, like, innocuous and, like, see the explanation of how much work went into it. Like,
cup of noodles.
Of, like, how hard it was. Like, the best part was this guy who had to design the styrofoam cup, had to design it so that people could walk and hold it, and it had to be a certain size and all this stuff. He was making so many of them that he started having nightmares about styrofoam cups
and ramen
falling on him and being buried in a sea of
avalanche of
yeah. And you read it and you're like, oh, you know, wow, that's kind of, you know, it's interesting how really sort of innocuous things, if you tell them, like I said before, if you tell them in an interesting way. I mean, it's like when you have a teacher who's a good teacher.
Right. Can make anything interesting.
It can make whatever, you know, whatever.
I had a great history teacher when I was in high school that made it fun and interesting and talked more about the smaller things and just funny, interesting bits.
And it ties into, you know, I also like action philosophers a lot.
Right.
You know, I think that if you want to learn philosophy, colleges should use action philosophers because there are things they explain in there better than any philosophy professor I ever had. You know, a nice 2-page explanation, you're like, oh, I actually get that,
right.
You know, for whatever reason, whether because it's got, you know, visuals along with it, it's telling it in an interesting way. So I wanted to throw that. It was Project X Challenger's Cup Noodle.
Cup of Noodle.
I guess it revolutionized food all over the world.
So how many are those?
There's
only two Project X?
There's one about the Nissan car. One of the cars they made.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I'm going to read that this weekend.
This gives me two reactions. One, I'm baffled that somebody would make these books.
It's a TV series, too.
And two, how they get people to read them.
No, well, we talked about this before, though. You can, I mean...
Well, the Cup of Noodles, like the 7-Eleven one I was on board with a little bit. This one is weird. Cup of Noodles is freaking me out.
Of course it's weird.
It's
but that's,
weird. It's great.
That's the interesting part of it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really hard to
It is a marvel of engineering, really. I mean, if you look at a cup of noodles...
The Japanese love to walk and eat, according to that book, which I don't understand. But people loved it. And I was like, wow.
A cup of
crazy,
noodles.
What a crazy little country.
Did they know that it would be college food in America for years to come?
No.
All right, let's get back to comics for a minute here, at least.
You have a healthcare comic?
I have a healthcare comic I read. I really enjoy it.
Dr. Stevens fucks you.
No, my other top of the stack this week was Hawaiian Dick, Screaming Black Thunder, number one.
Whoa.
From B. Clay Moore.
Sounds
and
like a porno.
Scott Chantler. It was also colored by Stephen Griffin, who was the original series artist. Hawaiian Dick is a series of miniseries, basically, that Clay and Stephen Griffin did. There's two trades out of them already, and this is the new series, the number one. And basically, it's about a private detective, sort of. He's not really a private detective, but he kind of is. He gets involved in all sorts of stuff. It's like 1954 Hawaii.
He's a dick.
He's a dick. And there's other, you know, in the previous stories, there's been elements of sort of mysticism and weird stuff and you know, crime and all sorts of good stuff in it. But this one in particular was about squadron of like expatriate pilots during World War II that banded together and created this sort of mysterious fighting squadron that would.
I like fighter pilot squadron.
Yeah, this one was pretty cool.
I do.
They weren't real pilots in the war, so they like put together their own little, you know, squadron of guys and like would go out on missions on their own sort of thing. And then
it's sort of a socialized fighter squad.
Sort of, yeah, and they were called Screaming Black Thunder. And now they've since retired, as far as anyone knows. And they do like air shows and stuff. The last remnants of these guys. There's like six of them. And Bird, who's the main character, the detective, and his secretary are checking out one of the air shows when out of nowhere a Japanese fighter pilot comes and shoots one of the planes down. So, of course, he gets involved because he was a big fan of these guys during the war. He was in the war, and he was a big fan of theirs and everything. So he gets involved, and the story goes on for him to try and, like, figure out what's going on, where this, all of a sudden, this Japanese Zero comes out of nowhere and shoots down one of these pilots. I really enjoyed the whole, like, mystery squadron aspect of it. In the back of the first issue, there's, like, this... typed letter to Eisenhower from like a secretary of the cabinet or something about the Black Squadron and it just sort of gives you all this little backstory about these guys and how during the war they would like all of a sudden just show up out of nowhere and help the fighting. And then they sort of went from just like doing that to sort of investigating the more bizarre occult aspects of the Nazi regime.
Ghost planes.
Yeah, they haven't really gotten into what they did yet, but that's sort of what they kind of evolved into, like this investigative team.
Flying goldfish.
And there's rumor that they still are doing that even now, and you get elements of that in the story, too, where they're like, one of the lines is like, they're pretty much retired, but they're still searching for the one big prize. And Bird's like, what big prize? And they're like, Hitler.
Hitler's gold plan.
Well, no, Hitler himself, and this is 1954, so Hitler's supposed to be dead.
Whoa.
But now all of a sudden maybe he isn't.
He's probably in Argentina.
Could be. Cuba.
Bolivia.
He's in Cuba enjoying the socialized medicine. it was a real solid story. The art was really good. This new artist, Scott Shantler, I'm not familiar with his stuff, but it was sort of a cartoony, almost Disney, like 50s Disney kind of pop stuff. The coloring, which was done by Stephen Griffin, was awesome, like 50s travel brochure, like really kind of blotchy and bright watercolor stuff. And it really gave it a great feel for that, the whole Hawaiian dick feel that these books have. So, but overall, it was just really good. I've enjoyed the Hawaiian Dick series, the first two, and this one started off real good, too. So check that out.
Cool.
The Screaming Black Thunder.
Sounds like a lot of part of the Hawaiian Dick.
Screaming Black Thunder Dick.
Thunder Dick.
Hawaiian Dick, Screaming Black Thunder.
Yeah.
But
dirty.
But it was good. I really did enjoy it.
The one book, last book I wanted to mention was actually also sort of war involved. I've been reading The Unknown Soldier Showcase.
Okay.
It sort of reminds me of the Jonah Hex one, where it's actually really, really good and still holds up
today
very well. Yeah. The Unknown Soldier, it's just this guy. It's a great character design, too, because it's a guy just, like, with a bunch of bandages and, like, a trench coat, which can kind of look pretty sweet, you know, like, in certain situations. But he gets dropped in all these World War II situations where he can wear disguises.
Uh-huh.
So you see all, you know, he appears to be someone different, like, in, you know, every issue.
Is he, like, a secret agent, or...?
Yeah, he gets sent in to, like... do some, you know, the shady shit.
Right.
You know,
Black Ops.
Yeah. But it's sort of like the Jonah Hex showcase, where it actually holds up really well storytelling-wise, and they're pretty compelling stories. And the art looks really good in black and white. You know, if you've seen the... it sort of reminds me of the Howard the Duck, Essential, which I think looks way better than the colored stuff, because you can actually see... the line work a little bit better without it getting obscured by sort of really blotchy,
right,
bad printing color, you know, and mm-hmm. really nice actual, you know, art. So I if anyone out there who's read the Jonah Hex showcase and really enjoyed it, I think would also really enjoy The Unknown Soldier. And I would recommend avoiding the War That Time Forgot showcase. It's about every story is about soldiers fighting dinosaurs, which seems cool.
Yeah, at first.
But Robert Kanigher wrote all of them, and then apparently didn't care to tie any of them together. So every issue is like the first time they do it. And after you've read about 10, you're like, how many fucking times did America fight dinosaurs on islands? Like, and it was
always
like, yeah, it was like, oh, it's strange and weird. And I was like, if you were buying this comic book, I don't care how old you were. Like, if you were 9 and the fifth time you read this, you're like, hey, you guys fought dinosaurs like
a month ago.
Doesn't anyone remember? You guys keep fighting dinosaurs. Well, then they also toss in shit like three circus brothers who become soldiers who are like tumblers and a GI robot. I mean, so it's good in small doses, but you can't read a bunch in a row. You're just sitting there like, oh, God, really? I mean, I understand the audience was different back then. But,
sure.
I mean, come on. Like, any 8-year-old's going to read that and be like, I thought you guys...
I don't know,
another
man.
Another fog, like, hidden island in the Pacific? Like, is there even an ocean there after, like, the 15th time? You know, it's no big surprise when a pterodactyl swoops down and, like, a giant pterodactyl, bigger than they actually were, swoops down and bites your bomber in half, you know, for, like, the 8th issue in a row. I think Kanigher was on something at that point.
Maybe he forgot.
Maybe every month he was like, I got a great idea.
Smoke-filled island.
Yeah, and none of the editors were like, you've pitched that idea nine times in a row.
He had Alzheimer's. Yeah. They didn't have the heart to tell him.
Dude, you've done that 8 times in a row. Idea. Soldiers fighting dinosaurs. dinosaurs. Okay, well, we'll see what happens.
All right, and Scotty, nothing from top of the stack this week?
No, I'm reading, I've actually, for the first time, reading two books. I'm trying to finish The Golden Compass. But then I've been sick the last couple of days and didn't have the energy to get into some heavy, like crazy fantasy stuff.
Cosplay, so,
cosplay. The last couple of nights I've been reading Kick Me, that Paul Feig book, the creator of Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, okay.
And just like basically true stories of his childhood, like little essays of different spots throughout his childhood. Because the Geeks and Freaks and Geeks were basically him.
Okay.
That's his real story.
Oh, really?
But this is even more. It's funny. It's funny as shit. And slightly pathetic and sad. So, but I haven't finished either one of them. So,
comic fans might like it.
Maybe next week.
Yeah, it's a little
pathetic. Yeah, you got it.
All right. Well, then that will wrap up Top of the Stack.
Later.
Something disturbing from it was the last issue. I think it was the last issue of New X-Men that you did that came out like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. You drew them all with mustaches, which I thought was odd.
No, it wasn't actually anything you did at all. But I've read it and then I got to the end and there was like a couple of pinup pages from Messiah Complex, was like a. I don't know if it was Michael Turner or who it was.
I think it was Finch.
Yeah, it was Finch, and he did the new X. And I looked at him like, oh, that's really... I was disturbed by it, because they were no longer children. They were all 28 years old.
Did they fall into that X-Men thing where every X-Men is about... Either somewhere between 26 and 28,
six foot, 200 pounds.
No matter when they've been introduced.
Yeah, I mean,
it was disturbing.
It was odd because I've been reading that book, and obviously with your characters and you draw them as kids.
I mean, they look their like. Yeah, they look their age. I specifically asked Chris Yost to give me the exact age of every character that in a lot of these characters he created.
Right.
So he would know and. We're really talking about 14 and 15-year-olds. I mean, we're not even close to 17 and 18 on these characters.
Right.
We're talking about like freshmen and sophomores in high school. And when I see people draw some of these characters,
yeah, nothing against Finch per se. It was a very odd thing of like finishing that book, getting to the last page, and then seeing that cover.
That's almost.
And I was just like, oh wow, that is really weird.
It's not him. It's like the weird expectation of that's how those characters.
Well, it's a lot of comic book artists, and it's not a diss to their skills as far as craftsmen go, but it's. Sometimes you have to actually take yourself out of the mind state of here's my comic book man form and
he's
here's my comic
eight,
book.
He's 8.5 feet tall or 8.5 heads tall.
Yes. Sometimes you actually have to put down the pencil and just think a little bit about character and what can I do with the drawing that's going to sell this character. Ever since I've never worked on a book that when I left – I ever cared what anybody did with the character afterwards.
Right.
I didn't care what people did with them before, and I didn't care what they did with that after. I just had fun drawing it while I did it. This was the first book I did. I did 7 issues of it, and when I left, and especially now because they're playing a pretty big part in the crossover.
Right.
They're on all the covers, and I've seen like 10 artists draw them, and I swear to God. Every time I see another person draw him, I get a little mad. I have like a weird attachment. It's the first time where I have a little like
attached to it.
That's my fucking character. Why are you doing that? I will say Umberto does them pretty good.
Yeah, Umberto does. Yeah,
but he's a good kid artist as
right,
well.
Right,
he does it pretty good. I did just see Jeff Campbell, J. Scott Campbell, do Pixie on one of the covers and X-23, and that was pretty cool. Now, obviously, they're way too sexy. Because every girl he draws is, like, a sexy. But he draws so freaking good. But for me, it makes me a little mad and then makes me a little, like, because, A, they're all wearing the costumes that I designed. Mm-hmm. And they all have the new look because I pretty much changed every character when I came out of that book. And so now to see every other artist taking that and doing it, I'm like, yeah, motherfuckers, that's my shit. And then I'm like, you motherfuckers, that's my shit.
I did that.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is. It's. But I know which ones you're talking about, though, because I've seen some covers like, oh, fuck it, come on.
That's how I – I was just like, oh, wow.
Well, if you go back and look at the issues prior to mine, with the exception of, I think, like – and this is to say, because I've liked most of the artists that have worked on those books, on the new X-Men books, throughout all its iterations, New Mutants, whatever, Academy X. But if you go back and look at the issues that came before mine – and just take a look at, like, X-23, for example, who is 15 years old. Almost every artist that drew her before me, it's amazing how old she looks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like 30. I think that was actually the character that on this particular page that I looked at. It was, like, X-23. I'm like, she was, you know, like you said, a 30-year-old supermodel, you know? And it's just like, oh, and it was just, as a reader of comics, you know, because I've read comics for so long, and they've always looked pretty much the same. Yeah. I've never really experienced that before of, like, getting used to those characters looking a certain way, and then all of a sudden having them, you know, it's like, oh, they went through a time machine. Yeah. You know, they grew up.
It just fucks things up to me. Like, if you even to see a cover or a pinup, like in that last issue, I think that's the issue where X-23 is in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And she, like, she had seen Hellion, who she has a crush on, kissing Nori. And because she's pretty much indestructible, because she's basically like a Wolverine clone.
Right, right.
She goes in the bathroom, like trashes the bathroom, and basically like cuts herself.
Right, right.
And then she's in there like depressed and like, I don't know why I'm doing this. And if she looks 15, then that scene makes sense.
Right,
right. If she looks like she's a 15-year-old and that happens, then those human flaws actually become, you have sympathy for her.
And I think they have more weight, too, because it's like, you know, a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah. If she looks 30, then all of a sudden she's not sympathetic, she's pathetic.
Well, it's always like the thing about, like, when you're like, oh, these people are freaks and everyone's scared of them, and then they're all, like, fucking smoking hot.
And giant,
like, You're like, wait a second, you're not weird looking.
Yeah,
you're like,
Jean Grey, oh, she must have just been.
Or, like, as I've said many times, if someone draws Cyclops and he's, like, a fucking bodybuilder.
Linebacker.
Someone calls him Slim, and I'm like, that doesn't work. Like, it doesn't make any sense within the context of the character.
Going into that, like, Anoli, right, the lizard kid, the little lizard kid. A, he's gay. He's, like, 14 or 15. And, like, just a little lizard guy. He doesn't really have any crazy powers. He can, you know, like, he can change his, like, chameleon, like, blend in with shit. Now, to me, if I see that character looking this, like, this big diesel dude, then all of a sudden the personality, because I will say Chris Yost is fantastic at writing personality.
Mm.
And if you can draw pictures that match what he's writing, then you really have something cool on your hands there.
Yeah.
And I think that's always been one of my complaints pretty much across the board in comics, because there is such a way of people's minds thinking this is how comics are drawn.
Right.
So all of a sudden what a writer's intention will be gets fucked up right out of the gate. It's like somebody's favorite Hollywood writer writing like this little kind of cute, touching comedy. And casting
Michael Bay.
And casting Arnold Schwarzenegger as the main, it shouldn't be fucking done. But that's what we do. We cast Arnold Schwarzenegger in every role.
Everything.
No matter how old or what the personality or what the character is, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger in every, like you said, Cyclops.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Hey, you weirdo. You freak.
Yeah.
Ripped dude. You know?
I mean, look over the edges, right? They were supposed to be at a school.
Right.
Like the X-Men were out of school. So you tell me Hank McCoy, even before he was blue-skinned, was a goddamn kid at school.
Or the fact that the one that always does it is like Professor X being ripped.
Yeah.
He's a dude in a wheelchair.
How is he working out?
Yeah. But he's like looks like he could bench 900 pounds. You know, he's drawn the same way.
Or Magneto. Oh, I always felt that way back then. Like, ooh, he's so. They gave him white hair. That's about the only thing of age.
He's this
old
man.
That's why Ian McKellen's so good as that character.
Exactly.
Because he has, like, a gravity of.
You can see history in his face.
Yeah. Instead of just being a 30 year old guy with white hair
and giant muscles. Magneto's giant.
I know.
Just giant.
He's huge. He's an intimidating
physical.
I'm going
to start a movement. To stop the muscle.
Stop the muscle.
You know what's great? Talking about the muscle.
Indie rock and roll is what I want. It's in my soul, it's what I need. Indie rock and roll, it's time.
An interesting documentary about sort of about China. It was about Yao Ming and his entry into the NDA. It was the year of the Yao.
The year. Oh, I've heard that's good.
It was good. It was actually told from the perspective of his interpreter here that was hired by the Rockets to be his interpreter and had never really. Had never worked with the NBA before, didn't really know much about basketball.
Just had to hang with him like 24 hours
a day.
Yeah,
just lived his life and basically was trying to explain. What's his name? The coach, Tomjanovich.
Yeah.
Explain basketball to Yao Ming in Chinese without really knowing anything about basketball. And it was pretty. It was actually a really. I was amazed at how fascinating it was, and how much appreciation I had for Yao Ming after watching that because of the pressure that guy was under at like 22 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, he was making a shitload of money, but. I mean, just the pressure he felt from China, from the whole country of people that were, you know, put him on a pedestal as a hero of the nation, and let alone the media and everything in the NBA. It was good, but
good
I think I'm going to move to London because I watched Sicko.
What's Sicko?
Oh yeah, the Michael Moore
about health. The health insurance
it's
industry.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, I literally when I got to watch it, I was like, maybe I'll move to London.
You see, because I'm not a huge Michael Moore. I think some of his movies are a little. At times, play a little fast and loose with stuff.
With reality.
9/11 was a little bit. This one, fact. I thought it was pretty interesting because it didn't have necessarily a Democratic or Republican slant to it. It was just about healthcare and how fucked up healthcare is in America.
I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
You can't. There is no defense of our healthcare system. Right, you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't care if you hate Michael Moore or love Michael Moore. You cannot defend our fucked up
health system.
Evil system.
No, it doesn't work for anybody.
It isn't even about people who don't have insurance. It's about people who have insurance
who get fucked.
That's what the very documentary starts off and goes, this is not about the people that don't have it. This isn't about the companies. This documentary is about people who have health insurance.
I have friends of my wife's whose daughter brain tumor. They found a brain tumor. They had to operate this huge, expensive thing. All these, and they're gonna have to sell their house because they can't afford.
Oh,
it
you should see the amount of people that went bankrupt in this documentary that had health insurance.
It's just insane.
Completely bankrupt, and then they go like to London, Canada, France.
It's all paid for.
I mean, the dude had a brain tumor. Right, he lived in America, moved here when he was 18, loved it here, would have never left. Lived here for 10, 12 years, and then got a brain tumor. Got on a plane, went back to France, got every chemo and surgery and blah, 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 3 months off work to paid, another 3 months unpaid off work by law to go spend on a beach to recover.
Yeah.
$0.
Jeez.
$0. And he didn't even fucking live there when he got cancer.
God.
And, like, we would have had that hospital in London, right? Hey, where's your billing department? We don't have one. What are we talking about? Billing department.
The thing I always love about it, too, is when you see people talk about this movie, and I'm sure someone, once they hear this, will go like, oh, I don't want to... Who wants to wait in those long lines? For, like, number one, if you've ever been to a hospital in America.
Yeah, I don't know who the fuck they think they're
going. Go to an emergency room and see what that's like.
Yeah.
Bleeding
Where's this hospital that you went to where everything's... Fast.
Yeah. Well, I know, like the greatest part was like talking to doctors, and even their manner of speak was telling you that they are so chill. Like one doctor in Canada, the black guy doctor in Canada was like, yeah, we just use, you know, this machine. And because it's just, there's no pressure. If someone's hurt, they fix them. And that's how they roll.
Did they discuss, because I know like one of the big sort of arguments about, you know, government subsidized health care is that then you won't have the best and the brightest dark doctors because
Wrong.
Nobody will be doing it.
Because
brain surgeons won't all of a sudden make, you know,
The poor doctor in London.
He owned an Audi.
Yeah.
A $1.2 million house. And he was a poor worker of the government.
He was a government employee.
Yeah. A doctor in London.
But how
which
did
is
he make all
we're
money?
Talking about London is the most expensive city to live in.
They still get paid well. They're doctors.
And they act like, because they showed all the commercials and stuff, in, or all the rhetoric in America.
Right.
Oh, you might as well be going to a third world country.
Right, that's the other.
And then you go to Canada, and it's just like little flowers in the waiting room. Yeah. It showed one guy, right? He got the tip of two fingers, just the tip of two fingers cut off. And the doctor said, okay, you got to choose, because obviously you can't afford both. $60,000 for the middle finger. And $12,000 for the other finger. So he had to pick one or the other to have a tip put back on, and then he had a nub on the other one. Okay? Then it goes to a guy in Canada that was working with a table saw, cut off all four fingers completely. Okay? He goes to the doctor into their terrible Stone Age surgery center with crazy sci-fi shit moving all around. And this is where the doctor was all chill and calm, like, oh, yeah, we put them back on. All four fingers back on. You know how much it costs? Nothing. And then they were like, how much, when he was in Europe, he was like, in London, he went to the pharmacy, I need to get my subscription filled. How much would that be? It's like $10 American, right? 10 US. $10. So that's for 20 pills. What if I need 60 pills? $10. Right. What if I need 150 pills? $10.
It's all the same.
And he goes, does the price ever change? He said, yeah, if you don't make enough money, it's free. I swear to God. And Michael Moore goes, where do I buy my detergent? And like trash bags, right? Because all of our pharmacies are Walgreens and shit.
Right.
He goes, sir, I didn't train for this long to sell you detergent. Because it's just a pharmacy. But I'm telling you, like, you watch this shit, and you're just kind of, like I said, I agree with you on most of Michael Moore's documentaries.
Right,
I usually enjoy them, but he is very heavy-handed.
You can see through his rhetoric, and obviously he has his own agenda.
Yeah, and he's getting illustrative. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does a great job at proving his points usually. But like I said, with this one, it felt like there was less of him taking part in it. And more of just showing you.
This is what's going on.
Because you can't refute when a lady's sitting there going, I took my 5-year-old daughter who was having seizures to the doctor.
They wouldn't
treat her because my insurance wasn't covered at this hospital. It was covered at the one across the street or across town. And the security came and forced me out because I told them I'd pay for it myself. My daughter's in trouble. And they forced me out of the building, said I was causing problems. They were going to call the police. And on the cab ride over, my daughter died. To the other hospital.
Jesus.
You can't. That's not rhetoric, okay?
Right.
That's just fucked
kids
up.
Dying because. And then they had another doctor talking about this lady doctor who worked for one of the insurance companies, talking about every year I would get a bone. She was on the claims department of the insurance, or whether they were going to accept or deny your claim. And she would get a bonus every year if she had a certain number of denials.
So,
and you're just like. It's crazy, and you like hear people know there's like they have a day whatever guy brought in socialized medicine in Canada, I forget his name, but they all know his name because he basically like they revere him as the person who like saved their world, their society, the guy who forced socialized medicine into
Canada.
Yeah. They love the motherfucker. They got like a day. They get off of work for the day.
The last thing I had to say about the movie is there's that old English guy who's stuck, not like old English like the 40, an old man who's English.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I wish he'd like run for president in our country. Because he was like, oh, you know, people are afraid of, in socialized medicine and all that. He's like, I don't understand why Americans are scared of their, government. Or it was like V for Vendetta.
Yeah.
He's like, what? He's like, if people are so unhappy about it, why don't they just
revolt?
Like,
that's what he was basically like, he said, if you tried to do what America does, he said, Michael Moore asked me a question or something like that.
If they got
rid of this, what would happen? Oh, the people would burn us out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it is a little different, obviously, because our country is so much larger than those countries. So it's a little easier for them to get together and revolt in a way that's actually going to mean we'd have to have
things down.
Yeah, we'd have to have a gigantic revolution.
Right. But think we could start it on the podcast.
We could have a reality TV show about a revolution where you get to vote.
The revolution will be televised.
Who's shot in a football stadium?
I do swear to God, hands down. They went to fucking Cuba.
Yeah.
And Cuba's all replaced. He took Americans over there, right? They would go to the hospital.
9/11 firefighters who, like, couldn't get medical treatment.
Went to Cuba.
Yeah. They took them to Cuba. Replaced their teeth.
Oh, my God.
Swear to God, hooking them up.
That's just so wrong.
I know.
That's just so fucking
And then the Cuban
wrong.
Fire Department.
See,
all
sometimes,
like,
I can't watch shit like that because it's
it will make you mad.
I know. It's like, I'm going to get a fucking sniper rifle. I'm going to go up in a clock tower.
Don't say that on the podcast.
Oh, sorry.
This one will. Like I said, I swear to you, and this is not. This is not a joke at all. When Casey got home that night, we had a talk. And I was like, I said, we might move to London.
I think we're going to have to go.
Because, that's what it was. There was a lady that just had a baby in a London hospital. And she was and her husband were leaving the hospital. And Michael Moore said, how much you pay for that baby? Right? Yeah. Like, how much you pay for that baby? What? The lady said, nothing. And the dude goes, we're not American. Right? You've had kids. Oh, much a fucking baby cost?
Well, I mean, us, it only costs, a couple grand. Maybe.
How much did they get to get him slapped?
But that's an extra.
Collectible babies. Yeah,
it depends on their CGC rating.
Yeah.
The cost, I think, I'm trying to remember because we went through and looked at all the costs. I mean, it was probably, I want to say somewhere like $35,000 or maybe more than that.
Holy
even.
Shit.
I mean, it was like an insane amount of money.
Sam, if you're listening, we're not.
Yeah. Well, no, but like because with our insurance, I mean, it ended up costing us maybe like $1,800.
Right.
That we ended up, if that, because
the miracle of birth.
Yeah, yeah.
Came with a.
And but I think when we tallied up like all the things, and that included like all of her doctor visits, and I think it was somewhere like maybe 32 grand or something like that. Just some insane number.
The exoskeleton for the baby.
Well,
isn't
yeah, of
fucked
course.
Up?
Yeah. It's insane.
That's the one lady had, one of the 9/11 workers had an inhaler, and she, it was $120 per inhaler, the canister.
Uh-huh.
And then went to Cuba. Exact same thing. It was like 80 cents. Swear to fucking God.
And they got good cigars.
Hey.
But it's evil.
Yeah, it's horrible. Evil.
Because I would rather pay.
There's a lot of problems in Cuba, though.
I'm not talking about Cuba.
Cuba's the best. To tie it back, how much do comics cost in Cuba? Because if I go over there and they're still 25 cents, I'm fucking pissed that we're paying 30. I'm paying $3. If someone's fucking us, this country, everything.
I couldn't imagine. I mean, it is. That is one thing. I won't revolt much. Like, I wouldn't actually get out in the streets for much.
Fight for the power.
Because there will be a time in my life I'm gonna be fucked up.
Yeah.
I just, that's inevitable. At some time, you are going to be fucked up. And to watch like this family who's raised four kids and sent them to great colleges, to watch them be bankrupt and have to move into their daughter's basement.
Yeah.
You're like,
that's insane.
That's fucked up.
Well, and a guy like you, I mean, as a freelancer, who, you're probably not going to have an exclusive deal for the rest of your life where you get insurance. And,
sure.
I mean, and like.
Well, even when you have it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, even when
matter.
You have it, you know what I mean? But if you don't,
well if you have like a hardcore flu or something.
Right.
But when something for real happens to you, you're fine.
Well, and then, I mean, there's like a lifetime. Insurance companies all have lifetime limits. Like, they'll only pay a certain amount for a life, basically.
Right.
And once you go over that amount,
they're
done.
So
that's
I shouldn't
it. You
be
know
getting
I mean?
The solid gold casts every time.
It might not be a good idea in case.
We have a regular cast, and then we have what we like to call the platinum club cast.
It's not a good idea.
It's a little more expensive. It's a higher thread count. It's a little more comfortable. You might like.
I'm either going to London or Canada.
I'm thinking about moving to Canada myself. I read this interesting article about global warming and how we're already the whole green thing.
Yeah,
it's not doing shit.
Of course, we're
way past the point of any return.
Getting a hybrid's gonna fix shit.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting GORP and burying it in your yard and heading to Canada.
I think I may.
What's Canada? Yeah. I mean,
well, only because there'll be water there. There won't, like a lot of the Midwestern, anything south of about like Southern Illinois is going to be so fucking hot, you're not going to want to live there.
An arid wasteland.
And there won't be any. I mean, you already can't get water in, like, they can't get water in
Atlanta.
Yeah, and in Georgia.
Really?
They're importing water into Georgia because they can't get it. I mean, and that, it's only going to get worse. I mean, it's going to get to a point, you know, where it's like, you know, New Mexico, Texas, any of those states, you know, any southern
state. If you live
there,
will run.
Be so friggin' hot.
It's a Mad Max shit.
I'll
go to Canada right now. Let's go.
Fucking
get
desert.
You, start making shoulder pads out of tires and conserving gas.
I got a crossbow in the car.
Guarantee there's some Mad Max shit in Southern Illinois.
It's gonna be hardcore.
Run!
It was a Rolling Stone article I read about. It was a guy who actually, he invented the first like ozone layer detector thing. I mean, he's a renowned scientist, and he basically said in 40 years there will be, you know, it'll be so bad that, you know, billions of people are going to be dead, and you know, half of this country will be uninhabitable.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah, I mean, he's like real doomsday shit.
How many episodes are we going to be out by that time?
Let's see. Calculate. We do. What do we do?
We'll have to start Skyping it if we move to Canada.
Yeah.
Skype recording.
We're out. I'm going to live in the fucking.
Where's Tom? He's outside fighting a gang of motorcyclists, for a bottle of water.
It could be interesting.
My throat
is crazy.
My voice is a little coarse because I've been drinking my own urine to live.
Oh, man.
Back to Canada.
The health insurance thing fucked me up after I watched that thing.
Yeah. That shit, me it can just
someone should do a comic just about health insurance.
Uh-huh. Yeah, talk to Project X.
Project that, well, we, the thing is, they'll only do it if someone fixes it. And
yeah.
We'll talk about how it got fixed.
How it got fixed.
They didn't do one about, like, you couldn't make ramen in the shape of a boat. Boat ramen, that's the way to go. Mister, have you tickled the witness? He couldn't catch his breath in the storm. Man, you gotta love your position. You're feeding baby food to the horse. I said, oh, my, 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 said the spider to the fly.
We're lazy. Let's just read a bunch of emails.
This is the part where we let the audience
do the show.
Yeah, exactly. Now we've had a lot of emails over the last few weeks, and we haven't really done any. So I figured we'd pull a bunch.
We'd
out
let them have their way with us.
Yes. First one is from Jeff Clemens. He said, you know, I'm a comic book artist, and listening to your show made me realize something. A lot of comic fans want to be comic book artists, but may not have the drive or ability to do it. But I realize, sitting here drawing, I spend so much damn time drawing, I can't sit down to enjoy all of those great books out there. I guess the grass is always greener on the other side.
Look.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
I don't feel too bad for you.
Yeah.
Ooh, oh, Jeff Clemens is crying. I hope your art doesn't get ruined by all your tears. Maybe this is why we don't do emails anymore.
Because we've already made fun of. it's a weird email because at the beginning it starts off as one topic in a way, like a lot of people want to be comic book artists, and by the end it's like how he doesn't read comics.
I don't know. I mean,
let's climb inside Jeff Clemens' mind.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, Jeff, you're gonna smile when you hear this. He just needed something to say so he could plug his website. That's all it was.
Jeff Clemens.
Because there was no question. He was like, a lot of people want to draw comics, and I don't read comics. I draw them.
www.jeffclemens.com. Well, go check out Jeff's website.
Go to Jeff's website.
And maybe send him an email.
Yeah. About how you'll never read his books because you're too busy drawing your own.
No, or people, what you could, if you are somebody who wishes you were able to draw, email him and tell him you think the grass is greener on their side, and you guys can talk back and forth. And maybe you guys could pull, like, some weird shit where you're disguised as each other for a day.
I know a lot of people.
And you'll even the green out.
I know a lot of people that read comics want to do comic book podcasts, but I look at it and go, I don't have time to read comics because I'm too busy working on this podcast, and the grass is, I don't.
Yeah.
What? Well,
next email.
You should send that to an artist.
Yeah.
The next one is from. What is that? Gillespie?
Giselle
Legacy, whatever.
She.
Just dropping you guys a quick note to let you know that I really enjoy your podcast. Of course you do. I'm always guaranteed a few good laughs.
That's our guarantee.
Yes.
A few.
Money back. Just a few.
It's a money back.
And a lot of bad ones.
You make my time at the Wacom drawing, at the Wacom drawing comics so much more enjoyable. This is another plug. I swear to God. You guys are crafty motherfuckers. And I know this. I know this because when I started off, I did the same shit.
I'm not dissing you.
But I would find ways to make small conversation and have an underlying plug. So I'll finish this out. I also enjoy the way you guys talk to each other as guys. Like, if no women is listening.
We assume no women are listening.
The things you can say crack me up to tears sometimes. Keep it up, and thank you for the great show. A faithful female French-Canadian listener. Yes, a French-Canadian.
Oh, how's the healthcare up in...
I'm sure the French-Canadians fucked it up somehow.
Right? No, man, that's the best of both worlds, because France had awesome healthcare, and Canada had all the... They got the Voltron of healthcare.
The doctors are free, but they're rude.
Yeah.
And everything's written in French.
And her pennyandaggie.com.
I think she does a webcomic.
2 out of 2 on people crying.
I will say, I'm sure none of us really think that, we don't talk thinking that anyone's listening, let alone female or male.
No, I like girls, though.
Well,
I'm aiming for a tranny.
Listen to
I'm
me, baby. Hey, Penny.
I'm aiming for a tranny crowd.
Ooh. Trannies are so intriguing.
All right, what's the next
one? Oh, what? That's outrageous?
Next email.
This is from Scott McCauley. www.scottmcauley.com.
No, it's my name and my girlfriend's last name.
Oh, that is weird.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
It's fucked up.
Let's see.
Wow.
Scotty, I want to skin you and wear your suit as a chief.
I know it's you, Tabor!
Love the okay, this is the real email from Scott McCauley. Love the podcast, and I have a request. My favorite things about your podcast is hearing about items new to me, other comics, movies, music, online comics, etc. I was wondering if you could do a short weekly or occasionally feature on your favorite comic book websites, just covering any and all topics related to comics. Thanks for the great show, Scott. There aren't that many, really.
I might start it this week, and because I've been coming up short with my rants.
Mm.
You're happier than people
you're out
think.
Of, you're
yeah,
out of
yeah
anger.
And that's the thing.
Well, it has been really a busy angry. Month. It has been with the holidays and stuff. It's been a little crazy, but I thought instead of trying to do like a full on rant every week, I'm going to rotate it with a rant and then like an artist website spotlight for kind of online creators it's not like they don't work, but it maybe sometimes they're not necessarily involved with comics or just on the fringe of comics, and so it might be something like this where it'd be nice things. So I think I'm going to start doing that for the Monday shows.
I don't really go to that many comic book websites. I mean, I check in on some of the news sites a little bit. The only one I read like on a regular basis is Journalista, the Fantagraphics.
Yeah. I go to Journalista. The Beat.
I like the Beat. Yeah.
Heidi McDonald. I go to iFanboy, but sometimes they write interesting little essays too.
I don't think we could do a weekly. There's not enough to do like a weekly. We'd be burnt by Christmas. We'd be done.
Yeah. So if you're an artist, look forward to that because I can give you. I mean, I have hundreds of artist websites.
Yeah. So you should do that.
But
do
just
that.
Like just like comic book. Yeah. There's not enough.
Yeah.
Next.
Next one is from John Cardinal. He wrote a question for Scotty. You're always mentioning Chris Bachalo and his run on Generation X. I was just wondering if you ever read his huge run on Shade the Changing Man. He did something like 50 issues in a row. Peter Milligan wrote the whole series, and Brendan McCarthy did a lot of the covers. I know the first 5 issues are in trade. If you haven't read it, please put down the big boy books and pick it up. If you have read it, why don't you talk about it? Anyway, just wondering, keep up the good work. John, P.S., if you read this on the show, I'll leave you an iTunes review.
Ha! Well, yeah, goes, motherfucker!
I so like this
book. I have them all. I have all of the Chris Bocciello issues. I've never read them.
Have you looked at them?
Yes. I just bought them recently, maybe like 3 months ago. Oh. I was at, I don't know where I was at, but I was...
Con, probably, a convention?
No, I just had a shop, maybe the Graham Cracker or something. And I was at Best Buy and went around to the corner and just picked out all the back issues that I could find... with that he did the interiors, and he did a fair amount of covers as well, and just kind of looked through them,
drooled over,
because I didn't buy them all consecutively. I was like, I'm not going to read them, you know, unless I have the entire thing.
Well, he did say they were trades, right?
Just the first five.
Oh, just the first five.
Which, you know,
yeah, that'll give you the whole.
Yeah, it's already a book that's like 12 years old, and they've only got the first five, so that means that.
But how did it look?
Oh, it's pretty cool. You could tell it's his first stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, his first time out there. I mean, you know, there's definitely some inkling to where he's going to go. And then there's, you know, but you could tell it's his early stuff. It's still cool. I love it. The visuals of it. But it's weird. I mean, it's Shade the Change.
I've never read an early Vertigo
book. There was a shitload of issues of that book, though.
Yeah.
And just, it went on forever.
Peter Milligan's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm aware of it. But I just haven't read it.
There you go.
Go leave your iTunes review,
John Cardinal.
Mr. Cardinal.
At johncardinal.com. All right, next email.
Scotty,
This one's from Mitchell. I have been reading comics for about over a year, and I just recently picked up Astonishing X-Men trades and have really enjoyed them. Anyways, I didn't read House of M or any of the other events leading up to X-Men Messiah Complex, but I wanted to check out the Ed Brubaker story that is supposed to shape the future of the X-Men line. How does the Astonishing X-Men fit into the continuity in the upcoming Messiah Complex story? I would really like to read more of the X-Men titles, but I just don't understand how many books fit together with continuity. Wow. Where can a new reader like me jump in and make sense of a story, especially so I can enjoy the new Ed Brubaker storyline? New X-Men. I would just read New X-Men.
Yeah, just read New.
Honestly, I don't think... I don't know, man.
Astonishing doesn't really fit in...
It is in the Messiah Complex.
Well, it is, but I'm saying the issues leading up to it...
Right.
Don't really fit into any continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sort of on their own while they're... supposed to be in the same world and everything. They don't really...
Well, the actual title of Astonishing doesn't seem to fit in leading up to it, but all the other books include the Astonishing Cat. Like my book,
right.
We included Astonishing X-Men in my book, in the new X-Men.
That's the weird thing about Astonishing. It's like they're supposed to be like the core book almost at
but
this
it was
point.
So late and
it doesn't, and the stories don't have anything to do, they haven't led up into Messiah Complex or anything, so I don't, and there isn't, you know, with Astonishing, I don't think it has anything to do with it. With the Brubaker stuff, even that stuff, I mean, none of it's really leading towards Messiah Complex. Is like the new X-Men is the best book to read leading up into Messiah Complex.
Yeah.
It probably gives you the best overview of what's happening, because it dealt with what's his name?
Well, the main guy came
Sinister, from Mr. Sinister.
Well, and then Stryker.
And Stryker and all that.
They all came from the new X-Men book.
Yeah.
Even prior to my run. But
yeah, yeah. I think that book probably does.
There's some serious shit for X-fans coming after the Messiah Complex, for real.
Yeah.
For real.
For reals. Don't cry too much, X-fans.
All right, Sal or Tom, are you up?
Tom's up.
This email's from Will. Hey, guys. I'm a fan of the show, and I'm always entertained by your off-tangent discussions on top of the usual comic talk. But I just had to say some funny things that I noticed since your format changed. We'll decide if it's funny. Why does it always sound like Tom and Scotty lock themselves into a closet and whisper into the microphone in fear they'll wake their moms up? Because my mom lives with me.
I've never fucking whispered in my life.
No,
you know what it is.
You guys tend to talk away from the mics when you're... talking back and forth to one another.
Oh.
Tom sits away from the mic quite a bit.
Yeah, you do sit away from the mic.
And Scotty has a very... his voice projects a lot, so a lot of times I'll have to turn him down, and then he'll turn his face.
I also think he's talking about in the new format. If you can't tell when we're on the show right now, I wouldn't talk this loud by myself in my apartment.
Right, right.
You know, and that's a weird, and I think I've gotten better at it, but I wouldn't necessarily sit down by myself and talk at this volume.
Right.
At the microphone, you know.
If you're talking about the Monday show, then that's because we everybody's recording it differently, and the levels are not going to be consistent.
He's probably talking about when Tom and I, every now and then, if somebody's talking and we got to say something, we'll lean away from the mics and we probably sound like we're whispering.
Or I just turn you guys' mics down because I'm tired of hearing
or Mike,
you.
Or maybe my mic's not real. My mic's made out of chocolate. Number two.
Yes.
How fucking weird is it to be basically talking to yourself into a mic? And don't tell me that you don't feel like a fucking douchebag when you do it, because I would call you a liar. I do feel like a douchebag when I'm recording by myself. And I can't do it if anyone else is in the apartment with me. I have to, well, in the same room. I can't have my girlfriend in the room with me when I record Answer Man, but she just looks at me like,
why are you such a douchebag?
Yeah, why are you such a douchebag? And I'm just like, why are you answering questions about Super Boys? And it's like,
I don't feel weird at all. I do it from a mirror. Like what's up?
You do it in front of a cutout stand-up of you.
Mine is very piecemeal together, though. Like, all of mine, like, I record little segments and I piece them all together and then add effects. And so mine's... Mine feels less of me sitting there having a conversation alone and more of like a project, you know, where I'm like layering and like, okay, I'll read a sentence, then stop, and then splice something.
Well, that's why I do weird stuff like recorded at like 7 in the morning or something, because if I just sit down and do it, I just feel like it's boring. I have to do something weird to make it like more entertaining
for
myself.
You're such a method podcaster.
I know. I have to get into it. Yeah. This is my next one.
Just get in the mindset.
My next one's
like a Gary Oldman of podcasting.
Yeah. My next one, I'm going to do it from inside the stomach of a tiger.
Nice. Yeah. Very good.
I had him eat the laptop a week ago.
I don't feel weird because...
You talk to yourself all the time.
Well, no, I do it generally in the very few moments of time in my life when I don't have screaming kids or my wife around and everything. So it's like I'm just trying to get it done, so I don't really think about it. And I've been in front of a mic like since I was a kid. I was in a bunch of bands.
Yeah, you were a child actor.
I was a child actor. I did a lot of voiceover work for Disney for years. I mean, it's
You might remember Sal from the very famous... that kids' food hot doggies that was just ground up hot dogs.
Nice.
I mean, look it up on Wikipedia.
It was good though.
Ours was Casey records all the time in the house.
Like, yeah, she's
at
always...
some point or another, one of us is always recording something. So it always sounds like there's a lunatic in the other room, because it'll just be like silence, and then somebody will go, yeah, yeah.
Well, the thing is, I talk about like shit like The Flash to myself out loud, and it's just putting a microphone in front of me.
Right.
I'll just sit by myself in my apartment just staring at a blank TV like, which one is my favorite Flash?
Flash.
Yeah, I'd say it out loud. Number three, one day Chris is going to totally erupt on you guys for constantly bagging on him for various shit. And he's going to rob Dark Tower Comics at gunpoint with women's panties on his head.
That's probably true. I mean, Chris probably will snap one day.
Oh, I know that.
Close.
Yeah.
He's getting close.
Yeah, he's getting a lot closer.
Chris is...
I think he got pretty close. Last week, you guys were in I thought a little bicker happened last week. I was pretty sure.
I was just bitching at him.
Do you think Chris would tell his wife if he killed us?
No, he'd bring a toothpaste. So he can brush out the kidney smell that he, because he ate. Not only did he kill Sal, but he started eating him.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, that's how crazy.
A little bit of all of us.
Yeah.
Number four, there's two number threes.
Oh,
that
three,
is funny.
3.2.
3A and then 3B. Thomas must be feeling like a real super nerd answering questions like, who is Superboy Prime? And why was his underwear different in Earth 2 post-crisis?
Why would he feel stupid?
I want to answer this question.
I'm pretty sure Tom wears his sister's used panties on top of him. Don't talk about my sister that way.
He's answering
the question in his closet.
No, Tom has just been waiting for someone to ask. He's answered the questions for years.
Yeah.
Seriously,
he's just recording them now.
I don't have much in my life, you know? I'm a pretty good accountant. Pretty funny guy. I'm getting on stage. Really, this is in my wheelhouse, if there's any, you know? This is it. This is what I have, okay? It feels good. All these years and years of reading comics, it was like when that person asked me the question about DC and Marvel crossovers, and I was like, finally, It was like someone describing something they're hungry for, and they described pizza to me, and I had a pizza, and I was able to give it to them. Like, no, listen, pizza exists, and I have one. You here it is. This is what you want. This is perfect. And I've really felt fulfilled.
All right.
Proud.
Is that the end of his email?
Anyway, the show is coming along pretty well with the transition to the new format, but I still enjoy the roundtable discussion the most, so keep it up. P.S. I give it 4 Tom Caters out of 5 on the Tom Cater scale.
No, it's the same exact email.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Will. Next email is from Jason Gilmore.
He has a website.
Jason said, do any of you know of a sci-fi comic book that has been created about the colonization of another planet? I'm creating one. I'm a comic book surface.
There we go.
I'm a comic book surface dweller from way back, which means I love the media, but haven't spent any time in any stores in a while. I just don't want to repeat anything that's been done. Thanks. Love the show. It'd be great to come to your store sometime.
You know what? I'm sure there is one. I wouldn't be concerned about in comics like
doing something that's already been done.
Doing something that's already been done. If your story, as long as you don't directly rip something off, and if you write it well and make the characters interesting, like comics. Comics aren't well known for its originality. Yeah. And like,
just go to the store
and
look.
Look,
look at Marvel and DC shelves.
Well, good luck with that.
Just draw it well and write it well. And it'll
His website is jgilmore.net.
You plugging motherfucker.
What the hell?
What the hell?
Do you know of any sci-fi comic books?
Doesn't cost
me anything. I'm making one.
It doesn't cost me anything. Next email. Scotty, you want to handle this?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, this one's from Errol. Hey, I love the show. Also, out of all the comic podcasts I listen to, I haven't heard a colorist interviewed, except for the Marvel one you did a couple of shows ago, or an inker. Artists and writers are great, but it would be nice to get some different insight into how comics are put together, rather than the usual, this is how I lay out a page, etc. Thanks for all the hard work. You guys are great. Errol from Canada.
We talked to Andy Parks.
Yeah, Andy Parks. We talked to Hilary Barta, who's primarily an inker.
We just don't know that many, I guess.
We don't. Yeah, I don't know that. I mean, colorists.
They're shut-ins. They're lunatics.
It's hard enough for us to talk to artists and writers, quite honestly. I mean, once you talk to one, you know, it's like, and because you don't really want to talk about, like me personally, I don't really want to talk about the craft of comic book making anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I've gotten as much sort of information that I need or want.
Yeah.
I'd rather just talk to interesting people that happen to make comics.
Yeah, I like talking to Hillary because he's interesting.
You turned your mic off, I think, there, Tom.
Did I?
Oh, maybe I turned you off.
No.
No, he did.
Okay, sorry.
You turned me off?
I did. I turned you all the way down.
Why? For how long?
I don't know. No, just for just that second.
Why? Was it a gut reaction to seeing my mouth move?
No, I'm... Yes, it was. I
Turn
saw you open
down.
Your mouth, and that goes
well, that's
down.
The
no,
thing
I
about
I
talking
must've...
to, like, Hillary. You know,
yeah, because Hillary's...
an interesting guy to talk to.
Right.
Aside from, you know... We talked to him about inking quite
we did
enough,
talk. We talked
time.
To him about being an ink... Yeah, we... So,
we
I mean...
covered it.
We're not... Hey, if there are any colorists out there that want to talk to us, give us an email.
Send us your
hey, I've
your
talked
portfolio.
And I do it all.
Yeah, you ink, you color,
I ink and
you
color.
Yeah. You do everything.
So yeah,
we talk to you. Every
and
week.
I will say when
it's
I get to the inking and coloring stand, there's not a lot I can say about it. I do it, and
right.
You ink what's already drawn, and you color what's already drawn and inked.
But, I mean, I don't know that we're going to get into, like, color theory and...
And that's very fun to talk about.
Yeah, it's just not...
Red goes good with yellow. The color wheel goes round and round.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're not opposed to talking to colorists or inkers.
But, no, you're right. I mean, it's like... At this point, we're almost we'd rather talk to people that do those things about not about other shit.
Yeah, about other things
about
they do.
And shit,
yeah, because it's like, you know, I mean,
in an audio podcast, there's only so much method that you can talk about before. I mean, especially coloring and especially inking. I mean, those are two crafts. Penciling, I can explain a gist of things.
Like,
can give you an insight. But when you're talking about coloring and inking, you have to look. I mean, it's such a visual situation.
Well, it's like if you want to know about inking, I would listen to the time we talked about Hillary about inking. Like lettering. I don't know how much more you could get about lettering than talking to
Richard Starkings.
Yeah. So like, how many more? How
I don't know
more?
If you'd want more shows than that about lettering.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, we have done them. So
they're
go
back.
Listen to
they're
them.
Back.
Though. Yeah.
All right. Who's next? We got. Tom, you got the next
I
one
I think
there?
So, yeah. Dave Myers, right? Sitting here listening to episode 153. and thought about how ironic it is that my background noise for drawing is talking about their background noise for drawing. Fascinating. Absolutely mind-blowing. Love the show. Scotty's the man. Blah, 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 Dave.
No, blah, fucking blah.
Blah, that's blah, good. Blah. Yeah, well, I commend him for just, like, not even dicking around.
Right.
So, you know, like, you got to, yeah.
I'm not even giving you any, but again, right? I will give somebody something at a convention for the first person who just writes in to say,
hey, I want to plug.
I'm plugging myself. Check out my shit.
Because because
even the listeners will notice from the emails that we've read, they'll notice a pattern. Yeah. Hey, guys, what are you doing? Just chilling, drawing.
The website is www.myspace.com/TheRealDaveDesigns.
I do want to say, don't feel bad. I'm not making fun of...
You got to do it. You got
to. Like I said, the only reason that I'm pointing it out is because I'm not making fun of you because I did the same thing for years.
Right.
Hey, what are you doing? You're
funny.
In Chicago? Oh, my God. I live in Chicago, too, and I draw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's the same.
Well, I mean, hell, me and Chris did it forever at conventions about the show. It's like, hey, I love your art. By the way, I'm on a podcast.
Yeah, we record ourselves out.
You know, it's like...
We're not dissing. We're actually giving you hints on how to actually disguise it more.
Well, I think what he was saying was that it was weird that... It was the show where you and Mike were talking about what you listen to.
That's right.
When you're drawing, and it was funny because he was listening to you talk about what you listen to.
Right.
So at least it was sort of a...
Good job, Dave Myers.
All right, the next one here, and I believe this is our last one, is from Bill. He said, howdy do. I heard you talking about the movie 300, political overtones and all the business. I work out here in H-Wood, Hollywood, and have an inside connection to this particular production. And one of the things that people misinterpret is that in the symbolic overtones of the film, America is supposed to be represented by the Persians, not the Spartans. Persians, the multicultural melting pot of different cultures, the powerhouse stomping all over the smaller sovereign nations, trying to force their brand of rule on them. It's a bit of a change from Miller's original intent, but was intentionally updated by the director and the production designers to be more timely in terms of all the Middle East action going on now. There actually was a really good talk here in L.A. with some of the filmmakers about this. I'll try to see if there is a link online for you dudes. P.S. I may be in Chicago around the end of the year. Can I swing by and shout out to y'all during the podcast?
I would say that makes sense, except for the thing I complained about in like the last speech at the end of the movie.
Would be like promoting the Middle Eastern way of...
Yeah, that's the thing I'm complaining about.
Yeah,
it's like the last 5 minutes, like there's a weird switch where it's like, I expected them to start using the term like freedom haters and all that at the very end.
Spartan fries.
Yeah. Yeah, Spartan. No, you can't call them Spartan fries. You know, that's I agree that throughout, you know, most of the movie, I think it sort of works. And then in that last little bit.
Still doesn't make make a whole lot of sense.
It's a weird reversal.
And of course, Bill, if you're in Chicago on a Friday night, you're more than welcome to stop by and say hello.
And you don't spell y'all with a W.
Y'all.
It's just Y-A apostrophe L-L.
Maybe he'd like to jaw
y'all.
At us.
Jaw?
Jaw.
Aw. All right. Well, I think that's it. I think that's the show this week.
Do the end announcements.
Join our friends and program. Leave us a voicemail. iTunes.
All right, Scotty.
You're ruining it. Spoilers.
Go to AroundComics.com where you can download and print out our LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they'll display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you in the store on the show as well as post it on our site. Become a friend of the program today.
Leave us a voicemail. We have a new toll-free number. 888-977-95903.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry. Give us a call and leave us a voicemail, and we may play it on the show.
Yes.
Whatever.
It's real easy. There's no numbers you got to punch in. It's just a regular voicemail
box.
Credit card? No, it's toll-free.
Social security number?
There's nothing. And I'm trying to figure out how we can do maybe like a live call-in thing with the number. We'll see how that works.
We'll get the people that are busy on... I'm sure all the people that have a lot of free time on Fridays.
Yeah, like us.
Oh,
You can digitally go and put your tongue in Chris's ear.
Yes.
By going to iTunes and leaving a review. Thanks to Dan Cassidy, GFA, Webhead770, Scott Kabalish.
Koblish. That's the inker from Brave and the Bold. Fuck him because I think he was...
Wow. No, fuck you.
I think he was trying to be funny, but he wrote an iTunes review, obviously, and it said, I love Tom and Chris and Mike and Scotty and John Suntress when he's there. Oh, and that other guy. Motherfucker!
Oh,
I will shut this show off.
I will shut
I'll turn it down. Shut it off.
I will turn all the mics down, and you will get an hour and a half of silence.
Yeah. in Cameron, and wow, Scotty is awesome.
Scotty is awesome.
Is that somebody's line on iTunes?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, they wrote a review.
Another 12-year-old child.
Thank you to all. This episode is sponsored by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades.com is offering this month's reading selection point blank to Around Comics listeners for an amazing 35% off the cover price. Get your copy today for only $9.72. That's such a weird number. You can now read Ed Brubaker's amazing 5-issue prologue to the critically acclaimed Sleeper for less than $10. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. I do want to remind everyone that... the Friday after this episode airs.
So the day...
Next Friday. The day,
day
after,
after you hear this.
We'll be recording our September club.
September?
I'm sorry, not September. Our November club show, which includes Point Blank and also The Devil's Backbone, the film, and
Drive-By
Truckers, Southern Rock Opera. So if you have comments or anything, you can either email us those, and we'll probably read them on the show, or you can leave us a voicemail on our new 800 number, and we may play it on that episode. So, but get them in by next Friday, or this coming tomorrow. After you hear this, unless you download it.
Or tonight when you.
Oh my God! What is this Back to the Future shit?
Stop your
Friday stuff. Next after to before therefore.
We're going. We don't need emails.
So there you go.
Yeah. And by the way, we're also proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency medical aid because in this country they need it.
Yes.
Financial support for essentials of life, an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit www.heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and ask about socialized medicine. Why we don't have it.
I'd like to thank the both of you for participating.
It was
today.
My pleasure.
As was mine.
Yeah. Thanks to Mark at Dark Tower for hosting us as usual. Everyone have a great week. We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. I can't remember. I think it might be... I don't know. It doesn't
matter.
Who
were we talking to?
I don't know who.
God.
Yeah, I don't remember. Somebody we're talking to.
We'll talk to somebody.
Somebody, and plus probably some more Answer Man,
yeah,
maybe Scotty Rand,
all
that stuff.
Bullshit we throw together.
In the meantime...
In between the time.
We'll be everywhere in and around...
The future of
comics.
And other things.
So
www.future.org.
Plug.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same, bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007. All rights reserved. Love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my love alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby. Baby, love you one more time.